goes, I'll just say, you suck, Rick.
Good, that's on the record. All right. All right. I'm Chairman Brad Holton. I'll bring the meeting to order. We have a 10:30 agenda item, and we're starting 5 minutes late, but for reasons I shall not digress on the record. So the meeting is for fiscal year 2025 budget workshop for Public Defenders Department. All right. Take it away, sir.
Well, I'd like to have a much longer conversation about budget, but as everyone's aware, we will be transitioning starting October 1st into the state system. That seems to be a hard transfer deadline. Everything seems to continue to be moving forward with that. I think that much of the issues that looks like remains in the budget is that according to the statutes that were signed into law this spring, even though the state public defender is going to be responsible for child protection cases, it appears that one of the statutes that encourages or requires the counties to continue to fund directly, hourly, attorneys for the guardian ad litem, which is a program that represents children in child protection cases, as well as in some other civil cases. A guardian ad litem just means guardian by law, in essence, and they are a group of volunteers in the community that come in and represent the best interest of the children. In these child protection cases, there's always a father or mother, if they can find either parent, and then the children. And there's a guardian ad litem program that represents those children under the age of 12 and then can be appointed in kids over the age of 12. It's either 12 or 14. That is made up of volunteers, and they get this piece of paper that appoints them. They can go interview school teachers, doctors, parents, family members. They have a great deal of authority. And they will report to the court on what is in the best interest of the child, including the children's own perspective. If the kid wants to come back home, or if they've been, you know, sexually or physically or emotionally abused and don't want to return to the parents. So their voice is heard in the courtroom during child protection cases. The guardian ad litem program then will have oftentimes an attorney appointed to represent them to make sure that they have somebody of legal expertise to represent them in those proceedings as well. So the statute authorizes the court to continue to appoint the guardian ad litem at the county's expense initially. The county will then seek reimbursement, it looks like probably annually, from the state for that appointment of the guardian ad litem's attorney. We currently have a rotating group of attorneys who will get assigned to parent in one case, and then maybe the guardian ad litem in another case, maybe a child in one case, so that they aren't all just representing one group. In places like Ada County, which is probably the only county, a good portion of their guardian ad litem attorneys are volunteers because they have a pretty healthy pro bono program where a lot of the big civil firms kind of compete to get pro bono hours, which is pro bono or just free representation. So they involve themselves in those child protection cases. We do not have that in Canyon County, never have. And so for as long as I've been involved in the system over here since 2005, the court's always just appointed an attorney for the guardian ad litem out of hand. So with that said, I think we've reserved about $300,000 in the conflicts attorney budget to cover that expense. I think the board's aware that the statute and what Mr. Fredrickson has presented is there's about $500,000 set aside as part of the state budget for public defense to cover reimbursement for all 44 counties' claims on that guardian ad litem attorney. So that money could very easily be absorb pretty quickly. So I think the county is going to have to expect that there may be some residual funds that are not reimbursed by the state. When the $500,000 is used up, it's done. Obviously, the largest counties will occupy the most of that because We have right now about 125 child protection cases per year, which isn't a lot out of the 6,500 cases that we do. However, each child protection case has about an 18-month to 24-month life. Normally, if somebody came in today and had their kids taken away, you can often expect that case may last for about 2 years by the time the children are either returned or terminated from their parental rights. And probably about 30 to 40% of child protection cases result in termination. The primary goal of all child protection cases is the reunification of the child with the parent or parents. In those circumstances where that's just not feasible, parent could be in prison. We've had parents who have passed away, obviously, or parents who just are not willing to work with the Department of Health and Welfare to clean their house or avoid putting their kids in risk or danger, or the abuse is so great that returning that child ever to that home is a bad idea, then those cases result in termination after about 2 years. So child protection can last a very long time, but I think the board annually will have to kind of see how much of the $500,000 pot you're able to get reimbursed by the state. So this will be probably an ongoing expense of about $300,000. As the commissioners are also aware, the statutes were passed this year which required, these are your state legislators, so I won't comment upon the intelligence of it all. It requires that the counties, that each county employee who's with the public defender's office on September 30th will have jobs on October 1st. The legislature has required that the counties pay for the cost of transferring up to 40 hours of vacation and up to 40 hours of sick time per attorney or per employee, and pay the cost of that to the state. So each employee will start at the state system with 40 hours of vacation time that they've earned from the county and 40 hours of sick time that they've earned from the county. So there's going to be an expense of not only covering that, and again, that's only if the employee has 40 hours or more.
Right.
And then the county here, you'll cover up to 240 hours for employers. Is it 240, I think? Yeah. Employees, and I think we only have like two or three employees are over the 240. That number is going to be hard to pin down till October. We have a lot of people using a lot of vacation time this summer, which is common. And, you know, everybody takes summertime, a little more vacation in the summertime with family and children. I've encouraged people to use up as much vacation time as they can. We have a few people who are burning up some sick time, not burning up in a negative way, but you know, I've had a couple of people who've had children in the last couple months and taking some time to be with their families that way for sick. But the 40 hours, there's a few of our employees who are under 40, most are over 40, but we understand that once that 40, once that transfer goes, they are not paid above that 40 hours at all. That sick time goes away. The vacation time that's above 40 would then be reimbursed by the county as if that person had left employment, I think is what was contemplated in that. So I think Rick has reserved about $399,996.
Because we like to
round down $4.
Yeah, okay.
To keep that going.
Yeah, I'm more of a rounded number because math's easier for me that way. So unless it's like a 10%, I can't figure out any kind of number. But there's some reserve in that. I can't say that, like I said, that number will change. I don't know how many people are going to stay in the office. I can't tell you at the last meeting with the state public defender at the town hall, he suggested that some employees would be taking pay cuts. That was the first time that he had mentioned that at all in the last 9 months. As a matter of fact, it had been represented that all employees would have their jobs and salaries remain at least. Now it's been presented that There are quite a few employees, especially in the larger counties, who may not have their salaries remain. Nobody knows exactly what their salary will be starting in October. That has not been communicated to the employees yet. So that has been presented. So I don't know how many people are going to, how they're going to take that. So those are numbers that we've been advised will come out sometime in July or August. So we're going to have to kind of address, so you may see a few more employees leaving over the course of the next couple months, which will result in some issues with paying out vacation. But we have been running with either one to three employees less than what our budget is, so we're a little under budget for our A lines this year. Those are all things that setting that money aside. Much of the rest of the budget has already been somewhat addressed in transferring a lot of our funds to the TCA office to help cover things like transcripts. I believe Rick and Sarah and all of us got an email from Fredrickson advising that there are some costs, and he's pulled it up here, that he anticipates that the state will not cover the expenses for. The counties are responsible for the cost of transcripts for appeals, probable cause hearings, complaint, arrest, or so forth, which are actually kind of odd because those are closed hearings, so you'll never, a search warrant, you'll be able to get a copy of the transcript, but not for the complaint or arrest warrant. Preliminary hearing transcripts, motion to suppress, Juvenile Corrections Act transcripts, grand jury. I can't tell you, my thoughts have been on this is we have typically paid those because it's the public defender who is requesting about 95% of those hearings.
Right.
So if the PD or the defense attorney is requesting that, then under rule, the defense attorney pays for that. That's even if you're in private practice. If you want a grand jury transcript from private practice, they send you an estimate of how much it's going to pay to or cost to cover the expense of that. You then deposit that money with the clerk who then prints up that transcript. So I think there could be some pushback on that. The evaluations are typically ordered by judges, but oftentimes we will request those as defense attorneys in advance to make those determinations. Interpreters have always been paid for and court reporters by the courts. Court reporters are, I think the state pays for the court reporters. And the counties have paid for the interpreters. However, the defense attorneys, we cover the cost of interpreters for outside the courtroom. So when we need to talk to our client, who I think we had a Russian client recently, we pay for the interpreter while we talk to them. But inside the courtroom, the court pays for those interpreters. So he did note that if the SPD obtains an evaluation, their agency will pay for that. If the judge orders it, they'll anticipate that the courts will cover the expense for that. I do not know, and I have not been told, but I've talked to the board before about Rule 12.2 motions where private attorneys seek public funds. The statute reads that if a private attorney is seeking public funds to cover expenses in the courtroom for investigation, experts, etc., that they must notify the public defender in those counties. And I attend those hearings or object or not object, depending on what those are, and I review all of those. I would assume that that statute would apply to the state public defender too, so that those expenses would go up to the state. I don't know how Mr. Fredrickson intends to cover that, or if he intends to, or if he assumes that the counties will still be responsible for that. I wish I had a better answer for you on that. The way I read the statute, it would then go to the state public defender's office for reimbursement or payment of those. But I don't know what Mr. Fredrickson's intent is with the counties. It seems like right now he's trying to throw some of these expenses back to the county. So it's something to be aware of in the next budget year. But some of those I've met with the trial court administrator, and we've sent some of those expenses that we normally had back over to their budgets. So that's about all I have, unless there's any questions.
Chairman.
On the guardian ad litem, I wanted to jump back to that. Just for clarification, it's one attorney for every child that gets put into that, or it's one attorney to represent the ad litem program?
It's typically one attorney to represent the ad litem program. Sometimes if the child is old enough, like 15, 16, 17, an attorney will be appointed to represent that child directly over representing the guardian ad litem representing the child.
Okay.
So, and there are times when there are cases where you have maybe young children who are represented by the guardian ad litem and older children who are represented directly by an attorney.
And the last time I met and talked to the ad litem in Caldwell, if it's the same, they had like 270 kids that they were managing. So it's a lot.
Yeah, and if you remember, most families are more than one child usually.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in a child protection case, it may be one case, but it could be all the children within that family.
Okay.
So, you know, I've seen as many as, you know, 7 to 9 children in one case being involved in that one.
Okay. I was just curious. It's not like it's affecting the budget, but just for curiosity. But the one that will affect the budget is the payout, that liability realized on the vacation.
Yeah. That's
an amazing load.
Yeah, and it's at least, you know, we have 53 employees, so I think probably with my last count, which was about 3 weeks ago, I think we had about 38 of the 53 employees were over the 40 hours. And again, some are right at that 40-hour mark. There was only one or two that were above what would be around the 240-hour mark.
So maybe I need further clarification. Is the state requesting the county to front load that benefit when they move to the county or to the state if that's where they choose to go? Or is it only the first 40 hours and they lose everything if it's not 40 hours? I'm still in the dark.
The way I understood and the way we've kind of talked about it is that because the county's personnel policy manual is that if you leave your position, you get paid your vacation out up to 240 hours. So the county would be paying the state 40 hours, and then if the employee had more than the 40 hours up to the 240, then they would receive a check directly from the county for the vacation.
And I'm going to do the Captain Obvious moment here, but we would never pay that if we weren't moving to the state, most likely for most employees.
Yeah, we would, well, unless they left the position.
Right.
If they retired.
But you have one of the highest retention rates in Canyon County.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, I just had to make sure I understood that correctly.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
So,
employee policy manual, all sick time would be gone, vacation would be paid out.
So for the record, when there's a statement that Canyon County assesses property tax, the state is putting an additional burden by moving public defense to the state, not the county. Okay, I just had to say that out loud. Okay.
You are absolutely brilliant. Thanks for that clarification. I think it's very, very important we state that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman, but it doesn't make sense.
In order to be transparent, and I've worked with this board and I have such a deep respect for Canyon County and this board and the team that we have built here, is I think the vision of this by certain counties was we're going to be out of the public defense business and we don't have to put that burden on property tax anymore. And it's pretty obvious to me that there's still quite a bit of expenses that the state public defender is putting back on the counties.
Right. And Chairman, if I could just indulge for 1 second, this reminds me of the discussion we had with the assessor on ITD and cherry picking through some of that in looking at the list of things that the state is going to expect the county to pay for that's a part of state public defense. The county is assuming all of that cost. And so if the state takes public defense, my assumption would be that they would take everything that would go with public defense.
That would be a good assumption.
Okay. All right. Well,
Unfortunately, it's not the,
Yeah.
seems to be what the reality of it is.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Chief?
Mr. Chair, I'll try to keep my frustrations down to a minimum on this whole thing.
Oh, me too. My tongue has just been bit off.
This whole process of creating a state public defense was good in concept. But my fear is, I'm looking at the budget request, is, you know, the pure vacation payouts. Commissioner Van Meek, you're spot on with that. We're assuming that burden that we wouldn't normally have.
Right.
We have the Guardian Ad Litem program. But do we put some money out there? Because we're going to be a la carte to death.
Mm-hmm.
Because as the state public defense program gets established, as they start rolling with the caseloads, and all these a la carte expenses come back to the county. So my question with all of that is, Director Bozzoli, how do we, what's our jurisdiction when we start getting bills from the state for these other a la carte systems that we weren't anticipating? Do we have the jurisdiction to say no?
As it relates to the Guardian Ad Litem?
Or just anything in general?
Right. I think as it relates to the Guardian Ad Litem, no, because the state statute has been modified to cover that. As to the rest of it, that is unclear and not seemingly addressed in rule or law.
Because what I've had many conversations around this, as the state public defense project is really underfunded. So I think
mm-hmm.
trying to accomplish the funding is chargeback models back to the county to pick up the void. So I guess that's my question, is what is our jurisdiction? I don't know if Fredrickson said anything about if we can just say no to that. Like, that's the biggest question we have.
Yeah. I think it's a very good question. Is it the Guardian Ad Litem, and it's Idaho Code 16-16-14? And if you looked under S-1367 is the one that adopted this, but it'll go into effect in a couple of weeks. Any proceeding under this chapter for a child 12 years of age or older, the court shall appoint counsel to represent the child. And in addition, may appoint a guardian ad litem. And then any child under 12, then the court appoints a guardian ad litem. First, from volunteer attorneys willing to represent the Guardian Ad Litem program pro bono. Absent volunteer counsel, attorneys for the Guardian Ad Litem shall be paid by the county, and the county shall be reimbursed for the actual verified costs of the Guardian Ad Litem program. A representation, the county incurred from the attorney costs for the program, as established in Section 57.8.28. By submitting a request to the Office of the State Public Defender. So that seems to indicate, but again, that Idaho Code 57-828 has only been funded up to $500,000 from the state.
Yeah. Like.
So, but the way I also look at this is, this could be a potential, the state does not like fixed rate contracts, and so they're moving away to an hourly rate. But this just says the county will, I mean, pay for this. So I think the county could maybe potentially contract with an attorney for the $100 an hour minimum and just have one attorney representing the Guardian Ad Litem program during that. But that's only for children under the age of 12. You may see attorneys representing children over the age of 12 with the Guardian Ad Litem, which is typically what's done with Judge Tucker's courtroom now. That may be something that's going to have to be addressed, but you're going to see those expenses. And we use $300,000 just based on the last 8 years of experience with child protection and conflict cases. That's probably about a number that where we would normally land with representation of the Guardian Ad Litem program. Based on those, but my suggestion would be is to at least contract with a singular attorney to represent the Guardian Ad Litem program, and then maybe, you know, have the other remaining contract attorneys if a child needs to be represented. But it might simplify to where you're not getting four sets or five sets of bills every 2 weeks to have to go through.
Right.
Right now, I do all that for you.
Right.
Thank you.
Understanding would be is even whether you're a regional or managing attorney, you will not see those funding sources, it's been pretty clear to me that the regional person and the managing attorney for each institutional office will not be involved in the budget or in the payment of claims. So those will be sent directly to the state public defender's office. So you'll have them submitted to you, and then you'll submit it to the state to be reimbursed. My suggestion would be, is this doesn't say any time frame, so I would send those every 2 weeks until, you know, you get told no. But this,
where are we going to fund that position to handle all of this?
Chairman?
It would be through contract, most likely.
Yeah. Okay.
But this really becomes, if you have a child over 12 that exceeds and trips into the adult status, then you would have the conservatorship. So I guess, is that, am I thinking of that correctly?
Now, once they're over the age of 18, then they age out of child protection. So you would not have an attorney represent one of these kids after 18.
Right, but if you have significant impact events, you could potentially, where they need a conservator, and I don't know. And that is state mandated. So it looks really messy to me, Chairman, and I wanted to say that in 2022, when I was at an IAC conference, the executive director at that time identified that the state of Idaho had significantly underfunded, under-anticipated the costs that would be incurred by going to a state public defense posture. So this is not information that's new, but it's disheartening to see them offloading that responsibility for that and parsing that out. I already said that.
So, I find it, can I, it's gonna be even worse. I'm not trying to mince my words, but the statute was changed to require the state public defender to pay the costs of child protection cases, but my understanding is right now I have two attorneys who are assigned to the parents in each case. And then we conflict out if mom and dad have a conflict or dad's in prison or out of the picture, and we will represent mom or dad, whomever the primary parent is. The state public defender has made it clear that even though it is, the statute has changed to the state's responsibility to represent those parents, that they are going to contract every party in a child protection case out. So my two attorneys who are normally doing CPA cases will no longer be handling CPA cases after October, and that will be a contract for every party in the child protection case. This seems odd to me, considering every budget we've submitted includes the expense for those child protection cases. So
I have a proposal the board to consider. I would suggest that we go into executive session over possible or pending litigation. Have some questions for the director that I don't want to entertain in public about the potential litigation.
And you'd like to do that right now, Chairman?
Yes.
I would do that under I then, D, F and I, because we have an attorney present. So, Chairman, I move that we adjourn to executive session under Idaho Code 742061 subsection F to communicate with legal counsel regarding pending or likely litigation, and then I to communicate with the risk manager for the same. And D, records exempt.
Okay. I second.
Okay, motion has been made and seconded. What say you, Commissioner Van Beek?
Yes.
Say you, Commissioner Brooks?
Yes.
Say you, Commissioner Holton? I say yes. So let's be in recess to executive session.
I think before we jump off, would the board want me in here still?
Yeah, stay in.
So I think for the record, Chief Public Defender's remaining in.
Okay, perfect.